Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
I would say good morning to people on Zoom, but alas, they're still in the cloud somewhere looking for us. Well, the adventure has begun. Chilly and beautiful. I wanted to just first of all thank the cooks, the Doandyo, and all the others who have been dealing with this sudden changing of circumstances. Snow falls, a tree comes down, a power line is broken, and we wake up in the dark and the chill. We wake up also from the lull of our lives, expecting the light switch to work, the heater to be on, coffee ready. We wake up, at least for a few moments, from our assumptions, expectations, and we're pulled. Some of us are kind of kicking and muttering away, but we're pulled into this moment as it is. And if we can settle into this moment, we find freedom. But most of us, and I include myself, it's like, oh no, what's going on? What will happen? Will there be breakfast? Well, welcome to the 2023 Rohatsu Sesshin. We're off to a good start. Rohatsu is a Japanese word, and actually it just means the eighth day. Nothing too exotic. But it's the day that Siddhartha Gautama, after years of deep practice and austerities, awakened. Siddhartha, as I'm sure almost everyone here knows, was raised, at least according to the myth that we have about him, raised in luxury and tutored to become the leader of his clan, as his father was. But at the age of 29, he experienced great doubt because of the sickness, old age, and death that he became deeply aware of. And he resolved to do what he could to dispel this doubt, to figure out what is an answer. Because everyone I love will experience this sickness, old age, and death. There is no way to escape a sickness, old age, and death. He wandered the northern plains of India, searching for answers. He practiced with several notable teachers of his time. And eventually he came upon five sannyasins, five men who were following a rather strict kind of religious practice. And for 6 years, he followed a very strict regime of austere practices, fasting, extreme fasting, breath work, all kinds of things. But at one point, he realized, I guess after 6 years, I mean, he kind of realized this is not working. The extremes of fasting and other austerities were not beneficial to the end of suffering. So he decided to sit under a fig tree, a ficus religiosa, commonly called now the Bodhi tree. And he took some rice gruel offered by a local woman named Sujata, and he began to meditate. Siddhartha vowed to remain in meditation until he found an end to suffering. And he did not waver from his resolve. On the morning of the eighth day, he looked up to see the morning star his mind and heart opened completely to the fundamental truth of this world. He did not transcend the world, but awakened to the shared intrinsic nature of all things. In the Zen tradition, Rohatsu Sesshin celebrates the Buddha's awakening and is traditionally the most intensive and challenging Sesshin of the year. It's said, at least traditionally, to have been the coldest week of the year. So that's when the Yutsit Sesshin. And it's kind of like here, there's no heat. It's drafty. But they thought that was good for practice. And it is also a joyous time, a gathering of practitioners to support each other in the container that we create. As we support each other to awaken to the world and life as it is. And that awakening, in that awakening, whether it's small or great, we transform. I'm sure almost everyone here has read about enlightenment. Maybe you've come across some awakening experiences. Maybe you've had some yourself. They sound wonderful, very special. But here's how Suzuki Roshi, the Japanese monk who brought this form of Zen practice from Japan to North America, expresses it. He says this: if you continue this practice, more and more you will acquire something. Nothing special, but nevertheless something. You may say universal nature, or Buddha nature, or enlightenment. You may call it by many names, but for the person who has it, it's nothing, and it's something. Well, I hope that clarifies things. This morning, as I was walking to breakfast, I was thinking, you know, we have all worked so hard to get here. The person sitting beside you, across from you, they too, just like you, struggled to slow down the spinning wheels of their daily life, to have some space, to have some time for silence and for stillness. And you know, most people, when they take a break from the busyness of their life, actually just substitute one kind of busyness for another. And while there is a certain nourishment in that, it doesn't really answer the deep longing that we all have to really know who we are, to know the heart of this life. So for the next days, each of us will courageously take the backward step, shine our gaze inwardly to illuminate what has been dark for so long. The Japanese word for what we're doing this week is Sesshin. And it's composed of two characters. meaning to touch or contact the heart-mind. However, sometimes a different character is used at the beginning of this word, Sesshin. And it doesn't change the pronunciation, but it has a slightly different meaning. The translation in that case would be more like to gather the heart mind. And we do both. We do both in Sesshin. This practice of putting down the busyness and concerns of daily life and resting in silence and stillness is really a very ancient one that I think is honored in many religious traditions. Here's a passage from the Book of Psalms in the Hebrew Bible, translated by Zolkitz and Norman Fisher. Simple, two sentences. Be still. Be still and know me. Be still and know that I am. That I am with you. That I am within you. In the silent center of things. Sitting quiet, not distracted by sounds and sights, we kind of slow down. We slow down from the rushing, self-centered mind chattering away about life that really fills most of our days. Zazen is the practice that offers us the possibility of true, deep stillness. Taking our seat, we gently hold the body still and upright because that helps to quieten the heart and the mind. We bring our awareness or our attention to the body and breath, and we begin to experience and to accept the body as it is. We begin to experience and accept the breath as it is. In Zazen, in this practice, there is no secret technique, no transcendent place you have to reach. We just let go of our busyness and we become aware of the vast stillness that is always present. And yet, one of the most difficult things, I think, for a human being to do is to simply let our thoughts and feelings arise and then dissolve on their own. That's so hard. But that's our practice. Let go. Let go. Be still. Be still and know I am. In the silent center of things, know I am. This I that's talked about in this passage is not the I that flashes from one thing to the next. It's not the I that judges, criticizes, and views the world as something out there, just beyond the eyeballs, just beyond this skin bag. This I is the truth of your life. Being still is not a technique. It's not a goal. It's not a means to an end. This being is just being who you are. Maybe you came here with a goal and purpose. That's okay. But here's what Suzuki Roshi says about that. You may think, if there is no purpose or goal in our practice, we will not know what to do. But there is a way. The way to practice without having any goal is to limit your activity or to be concentrated on what you're doing this moment instead of having some particular object in mind. You should limit your activity. When your mind is wandering about elsewhere, you have no chance to express yourself. But if you limit your activity to what you can do just now in this moment, then you can express fully your true nature, which is the universal Buddha nature. This is our way. Well, you may ask, what does it mean to limit our activity to what we can do just now? What does it mean to be with the whole body and breath in this moment? Well, that is for each of us to discover or to rediscover in our own way and time. For those of you who have been following us, practicing during the practice period, you'll know that we've been discussing koans from the Shoyoroku, or the Book of Serenity. And we're going to continue that during the session. So today, I'd like to introduce case 23, Luzu. Faces the wall. There's an introduction and a case, and I'll just read those first, and then we'll kind of unpack it a little bit. Bodhidharma's 9 years is called wall gazing. Shengguang's 3 vows divulge natural potential. How can you sweep away the tracks and obliterate the traces? That's the introduction. The main case goes like this. Whenever Luzu saw a monk coming, he would immediately face the wall. Nanchuan, hearing of this, said, I usually tell them to realize mastery before the empty eon, to understand before the Buddhas appeared in the world. Still, I haven't found one or a half. Luzu, that way will go on until the year of the ass. So let me introduce the characters first, then we'll unpack this a bit. Luzu Baoyun was a disciple of the great teacher Mazu. Mazu had many, many Dharma heirs, and we've already talked about him a little bit during some of the earlier talks. Now, not much is known about this character Luzu, or we don't know what temples he taught at, but he does figure prominently in a couple of koans. And in the Zen historical records. Nanchuan, the other character, was also a Dharma heir of the great Mazu. And so he was a Dharma brother of Luzu, right? They're kind of like buddies. So Nanchuan was a great teacher also and had hundreds of students. Just like Mazu. Mazu also had hundreds of students. Luzu is most noted for this strange teaching style of immediately facing a wall whenever a monk or someone came to see him with a question. You know, when I first read this koan, it struck me that Luzu is kind of acting like a spoilt young child who crosses her arms and turns away when an adult tells her no. Sitting in Zazen was his teaching. And I wonder if he really responded to everyone's questions with the same teaching, facing a wall. And then I thought, maybe I should try that. In Dokusan, anytime someone comes, I'll just turn, face the wall. Well, we face the wall when we come together to sit in Zazen. Wall Street, Koyuji, when we sit there, we always sit facing the wall. Here, because we have not so many walls, we have lots of glass, which is not so good, and we sit facing inward. But usually we sit facing a wall. And that is the Soto Zen style, the Soto Zen tradition. And we do that because, in part, it reflects the great myth of Bodhidharma's 9 years of facing a cave wall. And literally, facing a wall does have practical advantages because we recommend sitting with our eyes, you know, gently open. softly gazing about 45 degrees down to help prevent drowsiness. The mind wandering off, it just helps to stop that a little bit. So, and looking at a wall, there's very few visual distractions. Unless you're looking at a plug-in or a crack or a knot on your wall, then you can create all kinds of stories. But maybe you're lucky, it's just a blank wall. But I wonder, what is it for you to face a wall? And what is the wall you are facing today? And what is facing? What is facing? Let's go back and just look at the introduction again. Bodhidharma's 9 years is called wall gazing. Shengguan's 3 bows divulge the natural potential. How can you sweep away the tracks and obliterate the traces? Legend has it that the Indian monk Bodhidharma, after his meeting with the Chinese emperor, left the capital and spent 9 years, mostly as a hermit, meditating in a cave. So this is perhaps where Luzu got his inspiration. But how are we to understand 9 years of wall gazing? Patience, fortitude, stupidity, or something else? Whatever you think of it, it does set the stage for this koan about Luzu. Shengguan is another name for Huike. Huike is the second ancestor of Zen in China. There's lots to say about Huike, but I just want to tell you this story. Bodhidharma had 4 outstanding students. Daofu, the nun Zongqi, another student named Daoyu, and Huike. So Bodhidharma at one point, according to the myths, decided to return to what we call India today. And he asked each of these 4 students to express their understanding of the Dharma. And each was eloquent. And Bodhidharma complimented 3 of them in turn by saying things like, "You have attained my skin, you have attained my flesh, you have attained my bones." Huike then stepped forward to express his understanding, bowed 3 times in silence, and then stepped back. And Bodhidharma said, "You have attained my marrow." The verse, the introductory verse, remember, said, "These bows divulge the natural potential, or the essence of things." So it may seem to us when we hear this story that Huike had the deepest understanding of all the students. But Dogen, when he discusses this story, he says, no, that's a misunderstanding. Each of Bodhidharma's students was expressing the full Dharma. There's no ranking or depth of understanding. So that's something else to think about. The last line of the introduction went, "How can you sweep away the tracks and obliterate the traces?" Well, in this case, the writer is asking us, how do you go beyond the 3 silent bows of Huike so there's no trace of awakening, just your life unfolding, and you are completely there? One Zen teacher said, if you've had an awakening experience and you think, I'm awakened, You're not even halfway there. Too many tracks and traces there. Keep going. So let's go back to the main case. Luzu faces the wall whenever a monk came in with a question. So imagine, please, you come into the Dzogchen room and you ask, what is the meaning of life? Or maybe you ask, does a dog have Buddha nature? Or how do I quiet my mind? Or how do I deal with my aching back and knees? And each time, the teacher just faces a wall unspeaking. I think perhaps you'd stop coming to the Dzogchen room. Or you may think, the teacher is demonstrating, it is what it is, suck it up. Or facing the wall is one of those stupid, enigmatic Zen gestures. But we need to ask ourselves, what is Luzu's teaching? Each time a student came to see him, they came with thoughts of being perhaps insufficient, of needing to improve, to know something, to be fixed, to be healed. They brought their assumptions of brokenness, their assumptions of lack. Perhaps Luzu, facing the wall, was showing the completeness of things as they are, and the way to open to that completeness that has always been present. He shows, but he doesn't tell. The question is, how do we face the walls of our lives? Because is it not true we often don't? We turn away from the pain, suffering, confusion, whatever it is we're dealing with. We distract ourselves from the present and the unwanted. Luzu, with this simple gesture, encourages each of his students and us to directly face the conditions of this life, the 10,000 joys and the 10,000 sorrows that are simply a part of the human condition. But there's something more. I think also we need to go beyond whatever idea we may have about what it means to face the conditions of our life. How do we face these walls without adding something, lamenting, rationalizing, just judging? I think we all know, at least to some extent, it's better to face these walls of our life. But just knowing that really is of not much help. I should do it. I should do it. We must each find our way to fully and freely meet what life gives us. This, I think, is what, at least in part, Luzu is telling us. Meet your life. Face the walls that arise. And then in this koan, the great Nanchuan pipes up. I usually tell them to realize mastery before the empty eon, to understand before the Buddhas appeared in this world. Still, I haven't found one or a half. Luzu, that way, will go on until the year of the ass. So, first of all, the translation is a little off here. When I looked at the Chinese, rather than realize mastery, The characters say, directly accept reality as it is. In other words, to fully face one's life, fully meet one's life, before the empty kalpa. Well, kalpas are these almost endless lengths of time. So I had to do some research here. And of course, I went to Wikipedia. According to Wikipedia, one kalpa is 1.3 trillion years, which is amazing because modern astronomers speculate the universe is only 26.7 billion years old. The Indians, the ancient Indians, had an amazing understanding of mathematics, numbers. So, Nanchuan said, before the empty kalpa. In other words, the kalpa, this 1.3 trillion years, that is where nothing is really going on. And apparently there are three kalpas. One kalpa where nothing is going on, next kalpa things arise and start moving, and then things start to decline, the third kalpa. So that's a lot of years going on. So I think this is simply a poetic way of saying, see directly the wholeness of your life, the wholeness of reality before thought arises, before you start thinking about it. No gap between anything. And Nanchuan continued, understand even before the Buddhas appear in the world. So he says, don't get caught up in the thoughts of delusion and awakening. That's just kind of creating a kind of duality, you know, the teachings of the Buddha. Even before that, before you get caught in even the teachings of the Buddha, experience and understand your life. Go to the place where there is no delusion, no awakening, before all concepts and thoughts. I was thinking, this sounds pretty heady, but it's like your first taste of tea or coffee in the morning, right? You just taste it. Or that first piece of cheesecake. You just taste it, right? And then maybe you thought, oh, it's a bit too sweet or a bit too... But that you, first of all, it's just, I see people when they take their first sip of coffee. Do you ever watch people when they take their first sip of coffee or tea in the morning? So I feel like they're in zazen at that moment. But Nanchuan laments, I still haven't found a student. That's what he means by one or a half, or even a half a student, who can follow this advice to really be fully present in this moment. Then Nanchuan says, if Lu Zi continues to teach this way, he'll go on until the year of the ass. Now, I think probably as many people know, the Chinese zodiac has 12 years. Each one has a different animal, right? Snake, rabbit, etc. But there is no ass. So maybe Nanchuan is saying, Lu Zi's trapped in the year of the ass. He's going to do this forever because no one's really going to get it. Or maybe he's kind of complimenting Lu Zi in a backhanded way, which is very common amongst these ancient Chinese teachers, that Lu Zi's actions are beyond time, beyond limits that we typically impose upon ourselves. And indeed, his actions will inspire generations to come. Lu Zi encourages us to face the walls of our life, showing us how not to turn away, not to give in to distraction and fear. During this Rohatsu session, let's all of us take Luzu's teachings to heart. He's pointing a way home. So let us together practice wholeheartedly here in the mountains, tucked away from the bustle of the world, just like Dogen did. I'd like to end with a short poem by Dogen. And because it expresses my deep wish for all of you as we pass through this Rohatsu session into stillness and silence. Amid the deepest mountain paths, the retreat I find none other than my true home. Amid the deepest mountain paths, the retreat I find none other than my true home. Thank you very much for listening.